is the Chris Abraham Show.
Hey there, welcome to Chris Abraham Show, the Chris Abraham Show, formerly known as Chris Cast. Today is Season 5, Episode 20. That is 20, and I don't know when I'm going to stop Season 5. So, that is 20, right? 20? Isn't that 20? 20? Or is it... 13? Is it 13? Hey, Google, what is German for 20?
In German, that's 20.
20.
Anything else you want me to translate?
No, thank you. 20. It's 20.
20. Okay, I'll stop translating.
20. Hey, Google, what's 20 in French?
In French, that's 20. What else should I translate?
Nothing.
Sure, I'll stop translating.
I say 20. Isn't it 20?
In French, that's 20. What else should I translate?
Isn't it 20 or is it 20?
N'est-ce pas mauvais ou est-ce le téléphone?
Que? Quoi? Je ne sais pas que tu dis, tu me dis.
Key what? I don't know what you say, you tell me.
I sound like an idiot. Stop translating.
J'ai l'air d'un idiot. Arrêtez de traduire.
Arrête!
Sure, I'll stop translating.
Thank you. Well, I could restart this episode, but I think you guys find this kind of thing funny. So, I was working yesterday from Starbucks, and my lovely friend Jason came in. And we chatted, and he asked me about the podcast. And when I was on the phone with my friend Linda, I found out that she was listening to me on speaker mode, and that she had Amazon Echoes or whatever they're called. And I said, Alexa, play the latest episode of the Chris Abraham Show. Alexa, play the latest episode of the Chris Abraham Show.
Getting the Chris Abraham Show from Amazon Music. Here's Season 5, Episode 19, S5E Unwavering Libertarian Stand. Unconditional support for transgender rights.
Alexa, stop. So, I was driven to make this episode. Now, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I didn't think about it until just now. I was cleaning dishes and pans and realized that I don't have any fat or oil to treat my steel and cast iron pans with, so I felt like a bad father. My kids are apparently my bicycle, my dumbbells, my kettlebells, my pens, my knives, and my guns. So I am a Catholic boy because that's well over 10 things. So I am a good Catholic. I have many children. But I've been thinking about the fact that everybody goes very quickly to, Chris, you carry water for Putin. I literally had my fraternity brother take me to dinner and ask me point blank, are you being paid by the Russians for what you're writing on social and Facebook and Twitter and Mastodon? And my answer to him is, do you know anybody in Moscow? Because I'm doing this for free. And I get a lot of this, even after the Durham the Durham, right? It's not Dunham. It's after the Durham report, and after it's been proven that all you have to do is tell somebody that you carry water for Putin and you are disgraced, right? So that was the strategy by Hillary Clinton against Trump, or Hillary Clinton's camp against Trump. And we all know that the Steele dossier was BS, and Russiagate was BS, and PP tape is BS, and just about every allegation against anybody that they are in fact carrying water for Putin or they are a Russian asset is merely mudslinging, good old-fashioned mudslinging. You can tell because now I saw someone on Mastodon say that Jill Stein and what's his name? Hey Google, who is the presidential nominee for the Green Party? Cornel West.
On the website ballotpedia.org, they say the Green Party.
No, Alexa, stop. Who's Cornel West? Hey Google, who's Cornel West? Hey Google, who's Cornel West?
According to Wikipedia, Cornel Ronald West is an American philosopher, political activist, social critic, actor, and public intellectual. The grandson of
Hey
a
Google,
minister.
Is Cornel West a Russian asset?
Sorry, I don't understand.
Hey Google, is Jill Stein a Russian asset?
According to Wikipedia, in October 2019, Hillary Clinton said that Russia's ongoing efforts to influence U.S. elections included a plot to support a third-party candidate in 2020, which could either be Jill Stein, whom she described as a Russian asset, or Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh, Hillary. Oh, Hillary Clinton and Russiagate. Oh, Hillary Clinton. Oh, you. I don't know anything about Jill Stein. I know that she was...
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
Hey, Google, stop.
Okay, stopping Bose.
So, at the end of the day, I know Jill Stein, was she part of the Progressive Party, right? She was, or the... Hey, Google, what party was Jill Stein part of?
Jill Stein is a member of the Green Party of the United States.
And I remember Jill Stein took votes away from Hillary Clinton, right?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
Jill Stein cost Hillary dearly in 2016. So it's obviously a hit job. If anybody calls you a water carrier for Putin, it's not that you're literally... Hey Google, who is the British person who is a supporter of Hitler?
According to Wikipedia, Unity Valkyrie Freeman Mitford, the 8th of August 1914 to the 28th of May 1948, was a British socialite known for her relationship with Adolf Hitler. Both in Great Britain and Germany, she was a prominent supporter of Nazism, fascism, and anti-Semitism, and belonged to Hitler's inner circle of friends.
Well, I don't remember, but everybody always... I remember from history class where they always used to tell me that there was a British supporter or enabler or appeaser. Hey, Google, who is the British appeasement policy of Hitler before World War II?
On the website IWM.org...
There we are, Neville Chamberlain.
Neville Chamberlain, instituted in the hope of avoiding war, appeasement was the name given to Britain's policy in the 1930s of allowing Hitler to expand German territory unchecked. Most closely associated with British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, it is now widely discredited as a policy of weakness.
So there we go. So Neville Chamberlain is hereby considered to be an appeasement Brit. And Neville Chamberlain is almost always used as a parity, an echo, a comparison, a useful tool to say that anybody who is anti-Ukrainian war or anti-war in general, or doesn't believe the narrative associated with the Ukraine-Russian conflict, or believes even that the Imperial West spurred...
I don't know, but I found...
Hey, Google, stop!
Okay, stopping office display.
So annoying. But also useful, so there's my paradox. So it's such shorthand, right? It's such shorthand that anything that we want means that you are a fascist, and everything you don't we don't want means that you are an appeasement policy person. Now, I feel very strongly about all of these things, but I don't care one way or the other. I am only allergic to lying and bullshitting and propaganda and duplicity and hypocrisy. I'm not pro anything. I hate war, and I feel like the West had 25 years since the discussion with Russia, then the Soviet Union, about not moving eastward past Eastern Germany and not hegemonically including Eastern Central Europe and Eastern Europe in the Borg known as the at that time NATO, and then not much later known as the European Union. Now, I wouldn't even care about any of this stuff, but I lived in Berlin and I got to see how much Ukraine and Eastern Europe and Central Europe and even Western Europe, how dependent they were on Russian gas and oil. How you can very quickly turn off all of Europe if you were to turn off the pipelines coming from Russia, gas and oil. And I saw that countries like Germany and France and a lot of other countries had very friendly relationships with the former Soviet Union out of necessity, right? And this didn't stand very well at all when it came to the people who were writing the checks, which is namely the United States and I guess, you know, corporations, but mostly, you know, Western borrowing, Western banks, Western investment, and the military-industrial complex, along with taxpayer money and money borrowed from China. So I said to myself that this isn't going to last. This friendly nature, this friendliness with Russia, the fact that Russian money was flowing into the city of London and was flowing into Paris and London and Italy and Monaco and the French Riviera and Italy, and how, you know, even places like Sochi and so forth were becoming appealing to for cheaper, more affordable. I mean, there was really a kind of de facto integration and melding already between Russia and Western Europe that was completely uncomfortable. I mean, Russia is patently... Russia might be a serfdom. There's surely still rural serf-level people. There are definitely rurals and low-caste and what would be called... what's the term for rural... Like, hey, Google, what's the modern term for extremely rural or serf, modern serfs?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
Hey, Google, what is the concept of modern SERF?
On the website web-strategist.com, they say a modern-day serf is doing the work for others, creating content, creating data, driving others around, managing physical properties for rent so others can profit on marketplaces, and working for others as a contractor without full benefits. I also found
Hey Google, what is Russia's modern feudalism called?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
So anyway, I would the analogy here is that Russia has become an oligarchical serfdom, a feudalistic society based on modern oligarchy, right? And it is driven by Moscow and St. Petersburg.
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
It's driven by, you know, St. Petersburg and Moscow, and from there. There are, you know, mostly rural areas. That's mostly where the population density is. And over time, the definition of Russia as being an autocratic North Korea type despotic place akin to, hey, Google, where's that country where all the cars have to be white?
On the website rferl.org, they say, you can have whatever color car you want in Turkmenistan, as long as it is white.
So, Putin is not a Turkmenistan-esque despot. He is a Russian...
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
I'm going to ignore you. 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 So, even though Putin is being painted as a Turkmenistani despot, he doesn't have any form of Turkmenistani despotism. He is obviously extremely wealthy and benefits personally from his 25-year leadership, whether or not he was the man as the president or the man behind the president, which happened during one term. However, I mean, Nancy Pelosi has $100 million, so I would think that if Nancy Pelosi spent another 25 years, I feel like, hey, Google, how much is Barack Obama worth?
On the website GoBankingRates.com, they say Barack Obama's net worth, $70 million. Celebrity Net Worth and Business Insider have both reported the former president's net worth as $70 million. People also ask,
hey, Google, how much is Joe Biden's personal net worth?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
His net worth in 2023 is $9 million. Who knows? I don't know. I'm just saying that that there's no such thing as a poverty present anymore. There's no such thing as a president of the people. I mean, there's never been, right? Like, the only thing differentiating our president in terms of two-tier law is the following. The first one is, if you say you're not king, I guess you're not king. In the same way that America has 1,000 bases around the world, and because we say that we're not neocolonialists, and that the countries where our 1,000 bases are aren't our neo-colonies, just because we say it, we're like, no, we're a democracy. No, we're exporting democracy. No, we're just partners with other democratic countries that are completely autonomous and have complete personal agency. If you say it aloud enough, it has to be true. So we are not modern colonials, just like Great Britain is no longer a modern colonial power. And because people say that Great Britain is our poodle, it means that Great Britain and the City of London isn't actually our daddy. We're its daddy. And the power of London is completely diminished, and they don't barely mean anything in the world. And they're just so sad, especially with Brexit. Like, they're so sad. They're just a little island. Like, if you talk to Great Britain, they're like, oh, we're just a wee island. We don't have any power globally. We just are wee. The sun is set on our wee little island. Oh, we're just so charming. We're so Elizabethan. Oh, we're just so cute. Just like the Dutch. Oh, we're just the Dutch. We don't have global interests in petroleum completely. We're not the most influential country in the entire world dealing with metals and resources and mining and building and oil and gas and shale. No. That's silly. We have a silly, funny little royalty, and we are based on the word orange. Isn't that cute? So adorable. So if you say it, it's true. So because we say that Russia is an authoritarian nation where everybody is still thrown into the gulag, and because even though all the language we use is patently untrue because Russia collapsed in 89, 90, 91, 92, etc., and because it hasn't been actively communistic, totalitarian, despotic, etc. in 30 years. But if you say it loud enough, you can stoke the Cold War fears. They're just right under the surface. And since everybody in Congress is over 75 and over 60, I mean, I was alive during the Cold War. I was 19, 20, 21 when everything collapsed, but still, you know, in the first 19, 18, 19, 20 years of my life, the thermonuclear war was nigh. So, and Berlin was spooky, and there was Eastern, Western Germany, and Eastern Europe was all black and white, and everybody just drove around in Trabants and Ladas, and it was really sad. And they were pathetic, and all their powerlifters were trans women, or completely. And we didn't think that there were any beautiful women. There were no beautiful women because all we saw were powerlifters, and so we didn't know that Eastern European women are probably the most beautiful women on earth, and probably the smartest and funniest and cleverest and most lovely. So that was propaganda. And so, I don't know, right? Like, I feel like the woman on Mastodon was throwing stones at Jill Stein, calling her a Russian asset, and then calling Cornel West a Russian asset. And I'm like, hey, lady, you're a Russian asshat. She didn't get it, because there's no humor when you are a true believer. So I called her a Russian asshat, and she didn't get it. But I feel like I've been called a Russian asset a million times. I feel like if you're remotely curious about the true number of casualties and dead, we know it's probably between 5 and 10 to 1, and not in the direction that the media is telling you. It's more like 200,000 dead Ukrainians versus 20,000, right? And so that means 600,000 casualties, 200,000 dead. I feel like the numbers are swapped, right? Whatever the numbers are, they're like, no, let's swap it and make that the Russian casualties. So the latest news is that they were saying this is the first and worst humiliation that Putin ever received, which was the fact that the Wagner leader supposedly... Oh, he did. He did... what is the term? Hey, Google, what is the word for when ship's crew... Oh, mutiny. It's mutiny.
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
So it's mutiny.
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
Anyway, so the biggest humiliation that Putin ever had was the mutiny that the leader of a mercenary unit, this wasn't actually his troops, these are mercs, right? For the history of the world, mercs were bad. I used to read Soldier of Fortune in high school because I thought mercenaries are not bad, they're badass. But, you know, we talk about, what is it, G, or what was it called, Blackwater? We talk about all of these organizations as being shadowy and terrible and monstrous. And, you know, we're talking about how Wagner is going all over Africa and so forth, killing people en masse. And then, of course, Wagner's being used as an additional force in Ukraine. And everybody in the world is like, mercenaries are terrible. Mercenaries are terrible. And then when there's this mutiny, mercenaries are on the side of good. They obviously hate what Putin's doing. They support Ukraine. But mercenaries aren't like that. Mercenaries aren't, if this were an actual mutiny of actual generals, an actual main force, etc., that would be different. But this is the mutiny of paid mercs. Like, mercenaries are driven by money and hubris and pride, and they're not patriots. They're paper truts. Patriots. They're patriots. They're fair weather friends. This mutiny could have been simple as one of an oligarch or an American oligarch or a political opponent or a tech bro, whoever could have said, I'll double whatever Putin's paying you. And the guy's like, okay, what do you want me to do? And so my response when everybody was parroting and echoing this is the biggest humiliation ever to happen to Putin, what I didn't say is, I don't know if I'd be that humiliated if a bunch of paid mercs turned their back on me, because you just assume that the paid mercs are going to be disloyal. Like, just assume that if you pay somebody to love you, they don't actually love you. It's like, mercs are like whores, right? Mercs are whores. Sorry, mercs, but you're whores. Whores will tell you they love you. They'll give you a girlfriend experience, but they're still whores. And whores can be boys and girls. Or they can be theirs. I'm not being sexist here. Whores are whores are whores. So a mutiny by a whore is not nearly as bad as A2 Brute. So, but it didn't happen. Obviously, someone cut the check, someone Venmo'd, someone wired something, and it all went away. Maybe Belarus spotted Putin for another $1 trillion, maybe a couple hundred Bitcoin, who knows. Maybe Elon Musk did some Dogecoin over to Wagner Group to make sure that it didn't go sideways with nukes, or maybe George Soros, booga, booga, booga. Who knows? But whatever happened, my response was, if you think that's the most humiliating thing that's ever happened to Putin, how about you made a pledge with George H.W. Bush Sr., and you said, okay, I will be happy to move forward, you know, close all the books, make sure everything's fine, as long as you promise not to push forth towards the border with Russia. Make sure I at least have this Ukrainian buffer state, you know, maybe even just like if you really need to, like Donbass is pretty great. Like, we get along there. It's all love. Don't forget, Ukraine is Russia Holy Land. Ukraine was the birthplace of entire Russian civilization. Consider Ukraine a little bit like Jerusalem, right? For Russians, Ukraine is like Jerusalem. Ukraine is like Mecca, you know? Don't mess with Ukraine. Oh, okay, no problem. And then, because we can't help ourselves, and because we are the global hegemon, and because nobody has figured out that we're a colonial country, and that we, Europe is our colony because we own it, because we pay for all of their defense, and that they are in beholden to us in sort of a Faustian bargain, and maybe even Great Britain is part of the puppet meister and all of these other things, that because we do color revolutions, and because we're exporting democracy, which are good, and because we're exporting liberal democracy, which is good, and because we're exporting feminism, which is good, and feminism is much more sophisticated and modern and humane than any of your... I mean, we love Muslims, don't get us wrong. We love Catholics, don't get us wrong. And we love Buddhists, don't get us wrong. And we love Hindus, don't get us wrong. We love you, but you are against human nature, and you are against human freedom, and you break every single civil right in the entire world, and you are an offense to humanity, and if you don't support gay marriage, and if you don't support the health care of women and abortion and the liberation theology and black liberation theory and critical race theory, even though these things are brand new and we just sort of came up with them, and they've got a tinge of Marxism and socialist ideology on them, they got that stink. And even though they might be materialist beliefs, and even though quietly you can hear us dissing the fact that you believe in Sky Daddy, don't mind any of that stuff. And then all of a sudden collapses, falls, and so forth, fomenting what basically are vote-based coup d'etats. And then before you know it, the new parliaments vote in NATO and the EU and the Euro. And that's nothing like World War II and the hunger of Hitler for the domination of other countries, because this is opt-in. It's not opt-out. This is opt-in, just like the eugenics movement. If you want to abort your fetus, then that's empowering. If you want to start taking hormonal therapies that make you unable to have children ever, that's not eugenics. That's your decision. That's your health care. If you want to end your life early because you're extremely depressed or you're getting old, your quality of life is low, that's compassion. That's not eugenics. That's not a genetic ethno-cleansing. That is a empowerment agency choice. So now Hungary and maybe Poland and Russia and so forth, they're getting, you know, too extremist right. They're showing that they like Sky Daddy, and they believe in Sky Daddy, and they honor Sky Daddy, and that they honor marriage, traditional marriage between a man and a woman, which of course we call dirty breeders. And they bristle at the fact that children are trying to be liberated into their gender of choice. And all these things are too much for them. They're not evolved enough. They're not modern enough. They're not awake enough. They're not woke enough. They haven't come to Jesus about the neoliberal. They should be much kinder because this is an inquisition of sorts. And in an inquisition, everybody gives you an opportunity to accept Christ, right? You Jewish? Well, you're not Jewish anymore, or we're going to torture and kill you and your family. Oh, you're Muslim? Well, you know, that's fine and all, but now you're Christian, and now you're Catholic, and if you're not, then you and your family will be killed. Oh, you're Hindu? Oh, you're Buddhist? No, now you're Christian, and you're actually going to change your name. And I want one of your sons for the seminary, and one of your daughters for the nunnery, because now you are observant Catholics. So there we are on a global Inquisition. It's, I guess, called the Democrat Inquisition, or the progressive liberal or modern liberal Inquisition, and we're going around the world and we're saving pagan babies. Not awful like saving pagan babies like those awful colonial Christians who wanted to destroy their natural culture, their current culture, and replace it with Christianity. But like the good thing, which is like everybody can be any gender they want. Anybody should appreciate the state more than the family. Nobody should signify any type of extremist religion. So no hijab, all those other kinds of things. And then you too can be accepted into the faith and not end up in prison or dead. Amen. Or whatever materialistic amen is. Huzzah, maybe. So the funny thing is about this whole deal is while we were completely asleep at the wheel, hey Google, when did BRICS form? BRICS?
The BRICS was founded on June 16th, 2009. I also found an answer to this question. Where was the headquarter of BRICS? Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
Shanghai. On the website testbook.com, they say the correct answer is Shanghai. BRICS headquarter is located in Shanghai, China.
Hey Google, tell me all about BRICS.
According to Wikipedia, BRICS, originally named BRIC, is an acronym for the regional economies of Brazil, Russia, India, and China, which in 2010 had included the letter S for South Africa.
Tell me more about BRICS.
According to Wikipedia, BRICS, originally named BRIC, is an acronym for the regional economies of Brazil, Russia, India, and China, which in 2010 had included the letter S for South Africa.
Hey Google, how powerful is BRICS?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
The first result is the new BRICS alliance is a mortal threat to the West. So while we were asleep at the wheel and doing a bunch of internal Trump hate, and while we were having Trump derangement syndrome, while we're completely freaking out and hitting the streets and having our own domestic violence, the neighborhood was changing, and the neighborhood was changing to, if you will, rally against this crazy country. And now all the countries that we call second world or developing world are uniting against us. And so now, hey, Google, what's 2023 minus 2009?
I don't know, but I found these.
Hey, Google, what's 2023 minus 2009?
2023 minus 2009 is 14.
So 14 years ago, BRICS started, right? Like, and 13 years ago, South Africa was added, right? And all of these countries are extremely resource rich. China, for example, makes all of our stuff. And I learned yesterday on YouTube that the only reason California is so carbon neutral is because it does all of its ugly stuff in mainland China and then ships the finished product, including large works, pieces such as bridges and so forth, after all of the smelting and coal fire and electric fire and all the awful stuff happens, it cleans the blood off and then delivers it to China and so, I mean, to California, and ergo, there is no carbon offset required because all that was done NIMBY, not in my backyard. So you have China with huge amounts of resources, right? Let's go through BRICS. Brazil is what we like to call a shithole favela country, full of sexy people who loves Jesus, who love Jesus. And, you know, they are multi-culti already. They're like a really extremely giant Cuba. They're pretty lawless. They've got huge gun laws, but they're extremely resource intensive. They've got huge amounts of resources. They're a cornucopia of beauty, excitement, and favelas. I mean, we love them so much. Actually, they are Russia and Brazil are more like America than any other country on earth. So if you see a reflection in Brazil has the reflection that's multiculti and lawless, and Russia has the reflection that's like proud, uppity, insane, and sickly, drunk, addicted, alcoholic, and toothless, right? So maybe the creativity, maybe the depression and sadness, maybe the hubris. I think the hubris we get from Russia and the lawlessness we get from Brazil. So Brazil is the B. R is Ruski. Ruski is R. So that's our another brother from another mother. And that is the country that we're hating on. Or we only hate Emmanuel Goldstein. I mean Voldemort Putin. I mean Vladimir Putin. We hate him. We love the Russian people. We love the Russian people. We hate Vladimir Putin. We love the Russian people. All right, so that's the R. I is India. India, right? Are you starting to see that these are the people that we've stomped all over, right? Let's assume that that Britain is our double secret daddy. Like, Britain actually, the revolution never really happened. It was all kind of a joke to placate the natives. And so, like, Britain has always been our daddy. But it's been switcheroo. It's like, no. Britain is our lapdog. They're actually not our puppet master daddies. These are all countries that have been oppressed, that have been colonized, that have been destroyed, that have been undermined. Every single one of them has been at one point or another shit-canned by Britain or America or the EU, right? Even, I mean, we America was pretty much, America, Britain, and Europe pretty much collapsed South Africa by the whole Nelson Mandela movement, by the whole, like, we divest our investment in South Africa until apartheid is abolished. And even me, totally anti-apartheid, totally pro-Nelson Mandela. I mean, hey, but every action has a reaction. So South Africa, right? And China, right? So Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Sudafrika, whatever. Their name is Za, so there must be some Afrikaans. Hey, Google, what's the name for South Africa in Afrikaans?
Here is your translation.
Zuid-Afrika. Zuid-Afrika. Hey, Google, why is the top-level domain ZA for South Africa?
On the website Gandhi.net, they say ZA domain name ending is an abbreviation for Zuid-Afrika, the Dutch name for South Africa. I also found an answer to this question. Why does South Africa use ZA? Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
According to Wikipedia.org, management, none of the official names for South Africa can be abbreviated to ZA, which is an abbreviation of the Dutch Zuid-Afrika. Dutch was considered an official language in the Union of South Africa until 1961. It subsequently lost its synonymous status with Afrikaans in 1983.
Thank you.
Happy to help.
Very interesting. I thought it might have been that. So, that's a pretty big thing. 13, 14 years. Up until now, even now, nobody mentions it. Nobody talks about it. They don't talk about it like a competitor. They don't talk about it like it's an opposition NATO or an opposition EU or an opposition West. We talk about it dismissively as if it's some sort of loose thing, kind of like a drinking club. Hey, Google, who invented the BRICS?
According to Wikipedia, the earliest fired bricks appeared in Neolithic China.
Hey, Google, who invented BRICS?
The BRICS has four founders: Russia, China, India, and Brazil.
Anyway, hey, Google, what is the origin of the name BRICS?
On the website guides.loc.gov, they say BRICS is the acronym denoting the emerging national economies of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. The term was originally coined in 2001 as BRIC by the Goldman Sachs economist Jim O'Neill in his report, Building Better Global Economic BRICS. I also found an answer to this question. Where did BRICS originate? Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
According to Wikipedia.org, the original acronym BRIC was coined in 2001 by Goldman Sachs economist Jim O'Neill, who created the term to describe fast-growing economies that would collectively dominate the global economy by 2050.
So, 2001 it was invented, huh? Thank you. 2001 it was invented, but it didn't actually come into importance until a number of years later, but it was spoken into existence, and now it's a real thing. BRICS has a lot of influence, and it's becoming stronger and stronger to the point where China has Russia's back, right?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
Like, China has Russia's back now, and India has Russia's back, and Brazil has Russia's back, and even though nobody really talks about it, Iran has Russia's back. Iran has always had Russia's back, because we've turned our back, and because there's so many financial sanctions on Iran, there's financial sanctions on Russia, there are trade tariffs on China. Like, when I was working for Newconomy.media, I kind of had my eyeballs much more, this is 2017, I had my eyeballs on Bitcoin. And a lot of the whales were, in fact, China and Russia. And they were doing huge Bitcoin trades outside of the official monetary system. They were doing billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars of Bitcoin. These whales were doing Bitcoin trades back and forth to each other to buy and sell things outside of the official trade sanctions and so forth. And so there is a gray economy, and even more, I don't know if I said this, told this story, but in 1996, I met an oil broker who was the cousin of the woman I was traveling with on Haas is her name now. and Broussard. Now she's Anne Haas, and her cousin was a oil broker, and he has an American passport, but he was telling me that he brokers all different countries that have sanctions on them, guaranteed not allowed to broker oil, brokered oil with Cuba, brokered oil with Iran, brokered Iran oil, brokered Iraq oil, brokered like all kinds of oil, Venezuelan oil when there were sanctions on them. And he's like, you know, all we did was I guess I'm using a term, but the term I'm using is decantered, which is to say you took the original bottle that had, you know, Iran on it, and you poured the oil into a fresh vessel, which didn't have any Iran on it. It had Saudi Arabia or whatever. So you just like rebottle, and deliver to Cuba and do this and that. It's just like World War II when the Germans had to decide whether or not a ship was in fact filled with passengers or filled with munitions before they torpedoed them. So they ended up torpedoing everybody because they just assumed everything was a ruse. There is an entire extranational economy that goes on completely ignoring American sanctions, American limits, American tariffs, American blockades, and whatever. There's a giant middle finger going off. There's an equivalent of the dark web with regards to, what do we call, the dark world, where, every country that's being sanctioned is pleading poor mouth while secretly flush with cash. You can't assume that just because someone's swatting the ground singing uncle, 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 that they aren't secretly Scrooge McDuck swimming around in their own giant pit of money and jewels and gold and platinum and silver and diamonds, whatever. So anyway, this is a super long episode. It's like a million hours long. So I will hereby stop now and hope you enjoyed it, and want you to know that even though I am not, I'm told by Jason that the reason why everybody's shitting all over me about my neutral support, my support of Tulsi Gabbard, I love her. I completely support Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I completely support Jimmy Dore. I love Tucker Carlson. I think that that Elon Musk is a mensch. I think that Joe Rogan is an awesome guy. I adore Adam Curry. I adore but hate Adam Carolla. I adore John C. Dvorak. I love to listen to Glenn Beck once in a while. I'll even pop into InfoWars to hear what crazy Alex Jones is saying. I'm just like, I try to piss everybody off by going into Sputnik and RT and sharing those articles, and people shit themselves. Like, I can't tell you how much I've been blocked. My instance for Mastodon is abraham.su, and even that is a flex towards you guys are so stupid. The Cold War died. Hey, Google, how many years ago did the Cold War die?
According to Wikipedia, Cold War, 1985 to 1991, the time period of around 1985 to 1989 marked the final period of the Cold War.
Hey, Google, how many years since 1989?
On the website howlongagogo.com, they say 1989 was 33 years, 5 months and 25 days ago, which is 12,229 days.
33 is the magic number. 33 is the magic number. So based on that, 33 years ago, man, the Soviet Union went kaput. And so I went on to my registrar that I discovered in Berlin, and I registered Abraham.Jones. SU. SU stands for... Hey, Google, what does the top-level domain SU stand for?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
SU is an Internet Country Code top-level domain that was designated for the Soviet Union on 19 September 1990. So I have two .su domains. I have Abraham. I've always been envious of people like adam@curry.com, right? That's actually his email address, adam@curry.com. I admire anybody who's got their first name at lastname.com. So obviously that's not possible because the name Abraham or Abraham or is like, hey, Google, who was the prophet Abraham?
According to Wikipedia, Abraham is the common Hebrew patriarch of the Abrahamic religions, including Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
Thank you.
Just doing my job.
So being that Abraham is the patriarch of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, it's hard to find anything, Abraham, anything, right? Couldn't find anything until I found the fact that godless people, the Soviet, it's a perfect crime. Not only was the Soviet Union godless communists and materialists, but the country died in 1990, right? Or 1991 or whatever. Whenever the Soviet Union died and went away and broke up into the Russian Federation et al., nobody cared about the SU top-level domain, so it's mostly been caught in amber. And I took the Mastodon out of amber. I took the Mastodon, if you will, out of ice, out of permafrost. I took the Mastodon out of permafrost and reanimated it into abraham.su. So now, if you email me at chris@abraham.su, or you go to abraham.su/@chris, you'll find my Mastodon instance. So I am constantly, like, giving you the finger, all of you, because of your crazy, crazy obsession with needing to find an external enemy. And you need to find an external enemy that's not China, because we love China a long time, and we can't hate on a place that's so essential for our quality of life. And the fact that we're going to NIMBY our entire country into China, not in my backyard, not in my USA, but we're going to coal fire in China, we're going to gas fire, we're going to frack, we're going to nuke, we're going to do everything. We're going to allow those people to suck in soot, and then we're going to be a graceful little solar, whatever, battery, solar, wind utopia here. We're just going to bogart all of our petroleum reserves and all of our abiotic oil and all of our... We're going to give another 30 to 50 years to let all of the oil abiotically fill back up all of the wells that we've depleted over the last 100 years. And then everything will be perfect, and hopefully according to the crazy secret eugenicists that America and our ilk are, you know, hopefully by then there'll only be a population of, you know, 2.5 billion people because of a bunch of global oopsies, but none of it's our fault, just global oopsies. And then maybe when we're down to 500 million or a billion or a couple few billion people, we can start drilling baby drilling, and then we can start driving around our Lambos, Ferraris, hypercars, Puganis, and Porsche 918s, and all those other fun things without worrying about the environment. Amen. for entertainment purposes. Oh, and I got to tell you, if I have any recommendations for you, watch Wag the Dog, read Wag the Dog the book, awesome. But that wasn't what I was thinking about. What I was thinking about is something I completely forgot about. So I completely had a brain fart. Don't remember that at all. Oh, sweet universe, why'd you take that thought from my head? Was it too bombastic? Would it get me disappeared? I don't know. What was I thinking? Well, if I think about it, I will put it into the next episode. But, I remember. If you can, if you want, if you mail me a thumb drive, I have every single episode of the Art Bell Show from coast to coast. I have every single episode on my hard drive, and you're welcome to it if you send me a thumb drive to my address. But every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, there's Somewhere in Time, I think is what it's called. Somewhere in Time. Hey, Google, what are the weekly Saturday episodes with Art Bell? Is it called Back in Time or Somewhere in Time?
According to Wikipedia, classic episodes of Coast to Coast AM can be heard in some radio markets on Saturday nights under the name Somewhere in Time, hosted by Bell.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
So, every Saturday at 9 p.m., if I'm home, I will always find a radio show. I will always find a radio station that I can stream that has Somewhere in Time with Art Bell, and they will replay episodes from the 90s and 2000s, and you'll start to realize when you peg your reality on what people were saying in the 90s, and you realize that it's the same old recycled crap, the scales will fall from your eyes. The most revolutionary act you can do in the entire world is send me a USB drive. I will fill it with every Art Bell episode and listen to it and realize that this is all recycled stuff. All the apocalypticism, all the Russia panic, all the Putin panic, all the North Korea panic, all the Ted Kaczynski stuff, all the fears of white supremacy, all the fears of climate collapse, all the Al Gore stuff is like fresh in the 90s. You will poop yourself. Your head will explode. Your wig will go flying off. So make sure you don't wear your wig in public with these in your earphones. Go back and consume all the episodes. And there's a million of them of the Art Bell Show from coast to coast. Hey, Google, what years did Art Bell do his radio show?
According to Wikipedia, his original 1978 late-night Las Vegas program on KDWN was a political call-in show under the name West Coast AM. In 1988, Bell and Alan Corbeth renamed the show Coast to Coast AM and moved its broadcast from the Plaza Hotel in Las Vegas to Bell's home in Pahrump. I also found an answer to this question. What happened to Art Bell's wife? Do you want to hear it?
No.
Okay.
Hey, Google, what year did Art Bell host Coast to Coast AM?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
Hey, Google, what years did Art Bell host Coast to Coast AM?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
I don't know. Hey, Google, what year did Art Bell stop hosting Coast to Coast AM regularly?
I don't know, but I found these results on search.
Je ne sais pas. Je ne connais pas. All right, well, it doesn't matter. You should do it. That's your task. till next time, I love you. I believe in you. I want the best for you. God bless you. And Godspeed to you. Talk to you soon. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to The Chris Abraham Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time.